Ich habe den Nvidia-CEO in Paris getroffen und ich erzähle euch gleich, wie es dazu kam. Hallo und herzlich willkommen zur neuesten Folge des Podcasts. Letzte Woche war ich auf der GTC Paris, der großen Nvidia-Konferenz, habe dort den CEO Jensen Huang getroffen und auch noch ein Interview mit Timo Kistner von Nvidia Deutschland über AI-Use-Cases im Bereich Industrial und Manufacturing geführt. Ihr wisst ja, die GTC-Konferenz, die gibt es ja normalerweise in den USA und da stellt Jensen Huang ja immer in seiner großen Keynote die aktuellsten Trends in Sachen KI vor. Und jetzt ist er eben auch gerade auf Europa-Tour gewesen, das heißt, er war in London unterwegs, er war auch in Deutschland, um mit Friedrich Merz einen neuen KI-Deal auszuhandeln, also wahrscheinlich der Aufbau von Data Center in Deutschland. Und bei der GTC-Konferenz gab es auf der einen Seite eben seine große Keynote und dann natürlich noch ganz viele Stände mit Ausstellern, mit Partnern von Nvidia. Und ich war mit dabei, denn wenn Nvidia und Jensen natürlich mal in Europa sind, dann kann ich mir das nicht entgehen lassen. Das Ganze war ein 3-Tages-Event und diese Keynote, die war wirklich unglaublich. Die fand in diesem Dôme de Paris statt. Da finden normalerweise eher Konzerte und Sportevents statt. Und ich war da eben auch auf Einladung von Nvidia da, denn die machen das ganz clever. Die arbeiten nämlich nicht nur mit normaler, traditioneller Presse zusammen, wie zum Beispiel Wall Street Journal oder Financial Times, sondern jetzt eben auch mit vielen Creatoren. Und ich war eben einer der Creator aus Deutschland, die eben auch vor Ort waren. Und das Coole war, dass ich dann eben vor Ort auch noch Creator aus den USA getroffen habe, die ich auch selber gerne verfolge, deren Videos ich gerne schaue, die auch seit Jahren über Nvidia berichten, einerseits über die Technologie, aber natürlich auch über Nvidia als Aktie. Und das fand ich natürlich super spannend, da eben auch diese Leute vor Ort zu treffen. Die Keynote von Jensen war so, wie ihr es eben auch gewohnt seid, was ihr schon mal auf YouTube gesehen habt. Also wirklich über 1,5 Stunden eine ziemliche One-Man-Show. Das ist unglaublich, wie er es dann eben auch schafft, durchgehend dann eben auch wirklich zu präsentieren und auch die Spannung aufrechtzuerhalten. Zum Teil schon relativ technisch, wenn er dann eben auch auf die Details eingeht von der neuen Blackwell-Plattform, von den ganzen Chips. Und ein bisschen angewandter wird es dann natürlich, wenn er über autonomes Fahren oder über Robotik erzählt oder dann eben auch der Roboterhund auf der Bühne ist. Ein persönliches Highlight für mich war dann eben noch die Q&A nach der Keynote. Da gab es dann eben nochmal in kleinerer Runde mit Creatern und Journalisten einfach eine Fragerunde. Ich habe da Jensen eine Frage gestellt zum Thema AI Upskilling, nämlich wie man den Großteil der Gesellschaft dann eben auch mitnehmen kann, wenn es ums Thema KI-Wissen geht. Natürlich ein Thema, was mir sehr am Herzen liegt. Und Jensen sagte auch, dass das Thema AI-Upskilling wirklich eines der wichtigsten ist. Er hatte jetzt auch kein Patentrezept. Also ich habe ihn zum Beispiel gefragt, ob jetzt das Ganze ein Pflichttraining bei Unternehmen sein sollte oder ob KI-Unterricht an Schulen eingeführt werden sollte. Er hatte jetzt dazu keine definitive Meinung, sagte aber, dass es super wichtig ist, dass sich alle im Bereich KI weiterbilden und dass auch wir alle unser Wissen dann mit anderen teilen. Denn egal, wie fit ihr jetzt in KI seid, ob das jetzt 3 von 10 ist oder 8 von 10, ihr seid sicherlich 80% all eurer Freunde und Familie voraus. Das heißt, wenn ihr mit denen euer KI-Wissen teilt, ist es auf jeden Fall eine super Sache. Dann ging die Pressekonferenz dem Ende zu und ich dachte eigentlich, okay, der Jensen, der wird jetzt gleich zum nächsten Termin sprinten, aber tatsächlich hat er sich noch ein paar Minuten Zeit gelassen, um auch Selfies zu machen. Und da habe ich natürlich auch gleich ein Selfie mit Jensen gemacht. Das werde ich mir jetzt natürlich einrahmen und auch an die Wand hängen. Und man konnte dann eben noch eine kurze Frage an Jensen stellen, ein kurzes Gespräch mit ihm führen. Also war eine geniale Sache, Jensen auch mal vor Ort zu treffen. Außerdem konnte ich in Paris noch den Timo Kistner treffen. Der ist Teil des Nvidia-Teams in Deutschland und dort verantwortlich für die Bereiche Industrial und Manufacturing. Und mit Timo habe ich ein kurzes Interview auf Englisch geführt zu verschiedenen AI-Use-Cases in den Bereichen Manufacturing und Industrial AI. Gleich heute mein Interview mit Timo. Viel Spaß dabei.
We're here at GTC Paris, the big Nvidia conference, and we're here with Timo from the German team. Hi, Timo.
Hi, nice to meet you.
How Timo, you? Tell us a little bit about what you're doing at Nvidia.
So I'm the regional sales lead for manufacturing and industrial, so taking care of strategy, business development, working with our partners closely to see how can we help our partners and customers in the whole of EMEA in the end when it comes to using AI, any kind of digital twins, and so on.
Obviously, Germany is quite a big market for AI, also for Nvidia. So what are, in general, some of the companies that you're working with in Germany?
Yeah, so you can imagine we're working with the companies and you see them also, like a Siemens, for example, the BMW is a very good partner with us. Schaeffler is another one. But besides those very big names, we're also working with lots of very smaller and medium-sized companies that are very innovative, very driven by AI. And how do we do that next step? And how can we leverage AI to get better efficiency, to get more output in terms of what we're doing?
So obviously, there has been this huge boom in AI. And obviously, AI has not started 3 years ago, but it has been around a long time. What would you say are the, say, AI use cases that have been around for like 5 or 10 years? Yeah. And which are the more recent ones that are especially due to generative AI?
I think the obvious one is really like quality control, anything in terms of inspection of your produced goods on the shop floor. That is one thing that has been around for a long time. Now, that is sort of transforming into something that is just standard, right? You need to do that. If you don't do that today, do it. Start now. You really need to start now. It's not like we are analyzing a picture anymore. It's like we're analyzing video streams. There is something that we call VSS, video search and summarization. This is the standard. You need to work with that, right? That's pretty straightforward, whether it's quality control, whether it's for safety applications, that's a standard. On the other hand, what we see more and more is what we call decision optimization. There is a framework that we call CuOpt. So basically, you can use that, for example, to optimize your supply chain. You will have many suppliers, you will have many partners that help you with your distribution. And CuOpt is the framework that you can leverage to really optimize all of these supply chain partners and get more efficiency out of that. So I think those are the two important ones that we see a lot from an AI perspective. Now, if you look into digital twins, they're basically, or basically, the most important one is robotics. Everything related to robotics as, well, not a use case, but a big area that we're covering. This is becoming more and more important, and we see that many of our customers and partners are starting to work on that.
Maybe let's dissect that a little bit. So a digital twin is kind of a buzzword. What exactly does it mean, and why does a manufacturer need a digital twin?
The term digital twin has been around for quite some time already. The difference that we see today compared to what we saw in the past is the question of how close to reality, physics-based, can we do that simulation? So before, everything that we did was an approximation to some extent, right? And there was a digital twin of your product from an electrical perspective. There was a mechanical digital twin. There were so many different parts of it that didn't really work together, and there were approximations. What we see today and what we are enabling with our platform is to bring all those different tools, all those different data sources into one virtual environment, combine all of that, and with that really create a physics-based digital twin that is now literally mapping the exact replica of your real product, of your factory, of whatever you want to replicate in that virtual world.
Yeah, because I was wondering whether a digital twin is mainly like, say, for simulations before you go into the operations, or does it always reflect like the current state of the factory and you can at any time know exactly where some boxes and some robots are?
In the end, it's both. So think about the product lifecycle. Think about research and development. This is where you start with, right? This is where you use the digital twin for collaboration. Collaboration between your product team, all the different data sources coming into one place, and everyone knows exactly how does the overall product look like. Then you do the factory engineering. How does my factory look like? How does its setup look like? Again, the teams are working together and they are combining all the different data inputs. This is when you start with simulation. Now, simulation is one thing, simulating your manufacturing processes. Now, if you think about AI, we touched upon AI before. Well, this is also your virtual environment where you're going to train your AI models in the future. Think about quality control, what we mentioned and talked about before. Well, here is your virtual environment. Here is your factory with all the real conditions that you would find in the real world. And then you can train your AI model in that virtual environment. And ultimately, as you say, the goal is to have that perfect replica, including the status of your factory in terms of like, what's that robot currently doing? So sooner or later, there will be a one-on-one mapping from the actual factory into your virtual environment.
Yeah. So now help me understand, what is the connection between these AI use cases that have been around for a while and now this trend of generative AI? How do LLMs play a part in all of this?
What we have seen in the past was what we call perception AI, understanding what is happening in a certain picture, in a certain image, in a certain scene or something. With the combination now, a large language model, and that is sort of where video search and summarization comes in again. This is now the combination of a model being capable of analyzing video sequences, for example, and then feeding back a result in language. So helping me understand in a better way what's actually going on, what happened in the past hour, for example, in that factory. So we are now able to really combine the different technologies, the different models, and that helps us again interact with the respective AI model, with the respective digital twin, right? We're using that also for digital twins. So it makes it easier to really leverage. And so that's why all those technologies are coming together. You mentioned generative AI, agentic AI. The next step is going to be physical AI, obviously, where we then going to combine that not only to understand, but also to derive actions for a specific machine, for a robot in the end.
And what's the difference now between, say, old school robots that have been around in factories for 20 or 30 years that can maybe do single movements, and maybe those next generation kind of AI robots?
So you hear us a lot talking about physical AI, and in the context of physical AI, then talking about humanoid robots. So the main difference is flexibility, right? When we talk about humanoid robots, they are flexible. They can be used in an environment that is ever changing. Versus if you look back and think of classical robots that you see in an automotive assembly line, in any kind of assembly line, these are programmed. This is fixed, right? The program you cannot easily change. You need to have quite an effort to input to change that robot program. In the future, this is going to be more and more flexible, and robots will be really able to adapt to a task in real time.
When people talk about like chatbots and when we think about model training, we can kind of imagine, okay, we're kind of putting all of the information of the world into our model, and then it kind of knows everything about, I don't know, about German soccer. How would that work like in the manufacturing setting? How do we like train our machines, our models of our robots with the data of the manufacturer?
In the end, it's the same approach, right? You always have a foundational model, and then you look into like which are the right data sources to actually train it to a very specific task in the end, right? And so we see that with many manufacturers starting to do exactly that, do training, post-training of those foundation models to have their specific one that then helps them in any kind of factory environment, for example, right? To analyze along a production line, what's actually happening in that production line, to have a more easy sort of conversation with your production line, with your factory. It's in the end, it's the same approach. We're gonna see more and more of these models who are very specific then trained for the respective application.
And you have to train it with actual real data, or can you do it with like synthetic simulated data?
Well, that's a very interesting one. So obviously, if you have all the real training data, you want to use that.
Yeah.
But even then, you want to refine and optimize those models further and further. So at one point in time, you might be like, wait, I might have even more data. I might need more data. And this is where synthetic data generation sort of comes into that whole game. So synthetic data generation is an important part of what we're doing. And again, the virtual environment, the digital twin, is an important part because you need to train that in a way that when you want to retrain a vision model, well, the synthetic data behind that needs to be accurate, right? And so synthetic data generation for us is sort of a standard tool to enhance data for any kind of AI training today. More or less every partner we're working with is doing that today.
So Jensen, in his great keynote, he likes to talk about AI factories. And so he basically says, okay, AI factories are producing intelligence. And I think in the context of, say, media or software, it's kind of easy to understand, right? We're throwing data in and then intelligence comes out. What does that mean like in the context of, say, physical products? When, let's say, we have a company that is manufacturing physical goods, and now if we add on top the AI factory, how do they kind of interact with each other?
In the end, it's the same thing. So what we're doing with those AI models, we and our partners, actually, not us ourselves, but our partners, are enhancing their products with AI. And so in the end, directly or indirectly, as an end user, you will use those models, you will use those services either by adding and purchasing those respective features, or it will anyways become part of the product. One step back, thinking about physical AI, intelligent machines, right? Physical AI does not necessarily mean it always needs to be the humanoid robot. It can be any kind of intelligent machine. The factory can be an intelligent environment in the end, right? And so any kind of data that you produce in there, any kind of agent that you use to better understand like what's happening on the shop floor, although you're not creating, maybe in that case, more revenue, but you're creating more efficiency, which ultimately impacts your overall performance. Yeah. This is how you need to see that in the context of manufacturing and the AI factor.
Yeah. Good point. I was wondering about that. Obviously, AI can help us with efficiency. I think that's kind of easy to imagine. How does it help us to create maybe new products or services that don't exist yet?
Absolutely. I mean, again, think back to what we discussed on the product lifecycle. So even there, we have lots of discussions and integrations with our customers where they start using AI agents to help them better understand, okay, what's maybe a better design, what we're currently doing compared to. So I think literally that goes along the whole product line, integrating it into your product as well as leveraging it to design your product. And we'll see more and more of those agents for companies using that for themselves specifically. But that is, again, something where we are also closely working with our partner ecosystem, again, software vendors that are integrating more and more of those capabilities into their tools that end customers are then using again to design their product.
Now, let's say I'm a manufacturer, whether I'm like medium sized or really large company, and I'm hearing all about the AI revolution and about this whole new industrial age, but I don't really know where to start. How can NVIDIA help me with that? Do you offer like workshops or consulting, or how do I even know what some good use cases could be?
A very good question. So first of all, you need to understand that NVIDIA, we're all about partners. So we don't do any direct business with our customers. Everything that we do is via partners. Still, of course, we are happy to be part of such a discussion in terms of helping understand what is a good starting point, where are your challenges? And I think that's the right question to ask. What are my challenges today? Is it on the shop floor? Is it quality control? Well, start there, because this is something off the shelf. You can do it.
Yep.
And it will work, right? It's not like, yeah, let's try it out and maybe let's see what happens. This is there. If it's in a different area, let's find out. There are so many toolkits and frameworks out there that are going to help you to address that problem. It's not about, and this is what we've seen like a couple of years ago, we have often seen like, oh, AI is here. I need to do AI for whatever it takes. I don't know why and how. And what's the use case? That's not the point. Think about your use case and then start integrating it. Now, there's a huge partner ecosystem that can support you with that. And that is basically how we also then support the customer in terms of, look, here is the right partner for you. Let's think about what you actually need and then connecting them to that partner ecosystem.
And so you said that you work through partners. But let's say again, I'm this manufacturing company. In the end, what kind of NVIDIA products or services am I using? Like, will I have like lots of Blackwell racks somewhere, either in a data center or on-premise? Do I buy agents or microservices from NVIDIA through partners? How does that work?
In the end, it depends on your strategy. That's the first thing. Nobody will tell you, like, you need to go to the cloud while today you're all on-prem or the other way around. It depends on your strategy. We normally talk about three computers that you need to think about. There is one computer that you need for AI training. There is one computer that you need for the simulation. There is one computer to run your machine at the edge. So this is what you need to keep in mind, and that already tells you that's already somewhat of a hybrid approach. It's something that you need to figure out in a discussion, right? We will not prescribe, like, but this is the right partner for you. This is something you as a company need to also think about, with whom do you want to work. And again, this is where we are going to then support also to provide the ecosystem and find the right partner.
And maybe a final question, kind of a big picture question about the state of AI in Germany. So I won't ask you to grade it from 1 to 10 where we are at the moment, but where do you think is maybe in the short term, but also in the long term, maybe the biggest opportunities that maybe executives, but maybe also politicians need to think about when it comes to really driving AI adoption and really getting this AI innovation?
I think if you look back at the keynote and what we heard there, Germany is very rich in terms of engineering background and like exactly that knowledge that the world needs also, right? So everything in terms of leveraging that platform, enhancing everything that we can bring to the world, integrating it into our products, offering new services with that engineering background that we have. This is sort of, I think we are in a very good way there. Although we always tend to be like, okay, wait a second, here's a new technology. What can we do with it? Will it gonna maybe impact my own business model? Well, that's exactly the opportunity. You all have this expertise. You have, and I mean, any kind of engineering, it won't go away. Any kind of physical production, it won't go away just because there is AI. AI will enhance that, right?
Yeah.
And we have the capabilities to integrate that technology to make those products even more efficient.
Yeah.
And that's, I think, what we need to focus on and create the environment so that the industry can thrive in that environment.
Yeah, I like that you talked about enhancing what already exists, because I think sometimes in Germany, maybe we're a little negative, like, okay, we're missing out on everything. But I think AI doesn't exist in a vacuum. It needs existing data, it needs existing processes. We all have these great products and the physical AI.
Absolutely.
So I think it's a great combination.
Absolutely. It's all around. Use the technology. It's there.
Yeah.
It's not there to not be used. Integrate it into your products. Integrate it into your processes, and you will soon find that your efficiency will go up and your creativity and what you bring to the market will have a bigger impact in the market as well.
Okay. Thank you so much, Timo, for sharing your insights. So that was Timo from NVIDIA, live from GTC Paris.
Thank you.
So, das war mein Recap von der GTC Paris und mein kurzer Bericht über mein Treffen mit Jensen Huang und natürlich auch mein Interview mit Timo Kistner von NVIDIA Deutschland. Ich hoffe, euch hat die Folge gefallen und bis zum nächsten Mal.